I've got dreams, dreams to remember. I've got dreams, dreams to remember.
Welcome to the Thank You Rob podcast, episode number 3. Unofficially sponsored by Pearson Salted Nut Roll. Made right here in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Dope.
Yeah. Don't be a butthole. Eat a Pearson Salted Nut Roll.
Wow.
Yeah.
You've been working on that one.
I have. I say it every episode.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are they aware that of your...
Not no. at all. No.
But maybe this is the...
This is only episode number three.
This is the reel to throw
it
out.
It is. The line's in the water. Let's see
Come
what
on,
bites.
Nut Rolls.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Where are we at?
So I'm here with Anna Lyrical. Co-hosting, guest co-host of the Background Noise Crew and Common Labor. But before we get into all that. Yeah, I just got to recap my last episode. Episode number 2 was guest hosted by MC Rents.
Dope.
You know him.
Love him.
Yeah.
Good dude.
He is. We talked about Cypress Hill, Black Sunday album.
Super dope. One of my favorites.
Yeah?
You know, I'm not going to say like I know every single song or anything like that, but it was just, you know, it's a classic. It's one of the ones you kind of grow up with. Like, you know, I was listening to Nas. I was listening to Cypress Hill. You know, I was listening to Biggie, you know, and, you know. And
were you more of an East Coast or West Coast kind of guy? Neither. And I hate that people ask that question. Yeah. But, you know, when you're younger, you just...
You know, because I did, you know, maybe my credibility is going to take a shot here, but I didn't really like rap until I was about 16.
Right.
You know, like before I did not listen to rap at all.
That's okay, because actually when I was talking to Rents, he, his first hip-hop album that he even bought was Black Sunday.
Really? Yeah. Mine was Illmatic.
Okay.
So like,
about the same era, 93?
Yeah, Illmatic is 94, I believe.
Okay, right.
Black Sunday's 93, really? So it's like 20 years old.
It's 93, 94, somewhere
years,
in there.
Both those albums are 20 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. Exactly.
But we're here today. First, our topic of discussion is going to be Otis Redding.
Otis Redding.
An individual, a soul man. I really grew up, like in my teenage years, listening to hip-hop rap, you know? And I basically excluded everything else.
Really?
Yeah. And there were some pluses and minuses to that. Now, music is like a time machine. It's like all this shitty new music that comes out,
right?
Or has in like my late 20s, and now I'm in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I can just go back in time. For every new shitty group there is, there's like 5 classic R&B,
right?
Something or other,
yeah.
You know, Southern rock. I don't care. There's a lot of good music out there,
right?
That you can dig back in, and you know. Yeah. There's always a greatest hits album. That's a good way to start.
Oh, yeah.
And then you dig into the individual albums, you know?
Yeah, that's like kind of how... it's interesting because I, you know, we're talking about Otis Redding, and I kind of grew up on Led Zeppelin and maybe more related, Al Green. So, like, Al Green, like, my dad would always play him, like, in the car and stuff with tapes and stuff like that when I was younger. And then, like, I kind of, like, lost touch, you know, because I was listening to, like, alt-rock. And then I had my hip-hop phase as well, like, when I was 18. Like, that's all I listened to.
So you probably didn't want to listen to the music your parents listened to.
Exactly. Right? And then, like, I kind of, like, read it. I remember I worked at Best Buy for a little while, and I saw, like, it just was random. Like, I was, like, stocking the shelves. I worked in the media department, and I was stocking Al Green's greatest hits. I'm like, Al Green. Yeah, man, I should listen to that again, you know, and like it was like finding, you know, like an old toy, you know, it was so cool.
Memories coming back.
And, dude, like love and happiness, you know, just like, Al Green is one of my favorites.
Right,
so,
and so he will definitely be a future topic. I'll save that for episode number 70,
which is officially
reserved for you, episode number 70.
I will bring the business.
Yes.
So
Otis Redding. He's a junior. Did you know that?
No.
So somewhere in some buried grave, probably in Georgia, which is where he's from.
Yeah, he's Southern,
Otis Redding Sr. somewhere.
Otis Redding Sr. Well, you got to have the good legacy carried on.
And he was a musician as well.
Right. I did know that.
Not to the level of which Junior was, which I'll stop calling him Junior from this point forward. I don't think anyone did.
Yeah.
Maybe some like obscure aunt that he had.
Yeah, you don't really.
Junior again.
Yeah, it's.
But you know, he one of the interesting facts I found about him was that he left school at the age of 15.
Yeah, super young.
To continue work. And we actually did work in a band, Little Richard's band, was one of them, mm-hmm. backing band, to support his family, made money to support his family. So it's very honorable, I would say.
To do
something like that.
You know, obviously, you know, a lot of pop stars these days, they probably take care of their families, obviously. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
But think about back in the 50s,
right,
when race is a very touchy kind of issue, and you have to deal with all the oppression of that, and your mm-hmm. family maybe perhaps.
And especially in the South.
Yeah, especially in the South.
Right.
And so you're dealing with all that, and you got to, like, take care of your family and stuff. I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty heavy. Like, that's, I think that's very noble,
yes.
you know, as you're saying.
Yes.
I agree, 100%.
And he'd also play talent shows.
Talent shows.
Yeah.
To
collect prize money. He was like, I'll just play that show. What's that, $100? I can knock that out.
Yeah.
I've never heard, I don't know if there is any recordings of him at age 15.
I have not heard anything.
But if he had the voice that he had, you know, in his 20s, that'd be awesome, yeah. So he recorded his first song at Stax Recordings, These Arms of Mine, which led him to his record deal in 1962.
Yeah.
Very, very good song. Of course, he went through all the motions of struggling as a musician, being broke, touring. He went from touring in a station wagon to a van to, obviously, you know, shit, it's Otis Redding, you know?
Yeah.
People are, he makes a circuit every time he comes around, it's something to be bigger, better, more, a little more pay,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then finally the tour bus, you know?
Nice.
And the tour bus with Otis Redding huge across, wrapped in that
I've
vinyl.
I've seen pictures of that, yeah. That's funny. Because I Google searched it, Otis Redding, or Google image searched Otis Redding. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. He had the crazy tour bus that I've seen in some movies and stuff.
Like a jet. What was Led Zeppelin had a jet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane.
That's rock star shit.
That is. That's another level, man. That's in the stratosphere.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine being at that point.
Oh yeah, just ridiculous. And the things that went on in that plane, I couldn't
Who knows?
Even tell you.
Who knows?
I would like
man.
To read a memoir of some sort.
Jimmy Page or Robert Plant or something. Just.
I'm sure one of them.
One of them had to have written something.
Right, yeah.
You would think.
Yeah.
It's probably out there. We just have not tried to find it.
Not, they might not be as revealing as like Tommy Lee would be or was.
Well,
you know. But
I don't really care about his life, to be quite honest with you. But, you know, to each their own, I guess.
Right. I'll pretty much read any rock star's bio.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
Yeah, my mom gave me a great birthday present last year. She got me Jay-Z's Decoded, and that book was just awesome.
But that's now, from what I understand, that's not so much a biography, right? He just kind of tells you what he was talking about in this song, that song, right?
It's kind of a mixture.
Okay.
He talks about like. Yeah, I mean, he breaks down songs. Like each chapter has a song, but each song is kind of related to what he's talking about in the book.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
So it kind of follows his life.
Yeah, it does. Right. That's why I like it so much.
Okay.
You know, because he's talking about, like, this, and then he's talking about, like, when Obama became president and what was going on and what songs he made, and he's talking about, like, you know, how he used to deal drugs and how he was making so much money doing that he didn't even want to rap because he was just like, man, I'm already making a grip right now,
right?
And I'm hustling. Like, why do I want to rap? You know,
because
like, you know, at that time, like, the only way you could really get on was to get on with a record company,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like that was the only way, you know, mm-hmm. back then. So
I gotta read that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I really like it a lot, and I think you know, obviously someone helped him write it. You know, there's a guy like a narrator, editor guy,
co-author,
but
or whatever.
But. It's I don't know. It's a really good insight into kind of the mind state of like a hustler.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
I was a late adopter to Jay-Z as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it was after Blueprint 2.
Yeah.
That I knew his radio songs, but
right.
But now I love him.
Nice.
Like a man, only the way a man could love another man.
A man.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In the most heterosexual way.
Right.
Course, but,
right.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
Otis, another interesting thing that I found was he performed at the Monterey Pop Festival, which was actually the first widely promoted outdoor concert ever.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, heavily attended.
Yeah, it was a concert. I'm a lot of people were there.
Yeah. I don't know if he headlined, but he played the Sunday night of the event.
Yeah, he kind
of
busted that whole door down because his music was just that good,
right?
I think, you know. And his voice is just so, so good.
Right. And it was a predominantly white crowd, too.
Right.
And I want to say Jimi Hendrix might have played that show, too.
Yeah.
But again, he was rock, and Otis was, you know, R&B.
R&B and soul music, yeah.
So it was a little bit of a... I can only imagine being there, you know, it's like... I'd imagine I'd probably be... probably just fucking out of it with acid and whatever else was handed to me, you know what I mean? And just like, what's next, man? I don't know, Flower Child. You
know? Otis Redding, man. Yeah. What is that? I don't know.
Let's check it out.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and then, of course, if you were in that state of mind and Otis Redding came on stage, you know?
You'd probably think he was like Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even if you weren't... didn't even know or anything about Jesus.
Right.
Probably it would manifest itself.
Yeah, it would all just make sense.
Yeah, it would all just come together, I feel like.
But Otis himself was inspired by the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album and recorded the song Sitting on the Dock of the Bay in the winter of 1967.
Yeah. And then he died.
Well, actually, here's the thing, though. His label didn't like the song.
Right.
They thought it was too R&B-ish. Which I don't know if that's a word, but R&B-ish is a word now. Otis himself believed it was the best song he'd ever written and thought it would top the charts.
And
he was right.
He was a prophet. Yeah. He was prophetic.
The song was the first posthumous... Posthumous?
Posthumous, yeah.
Posthumous. That's how you say that word.
Yeah, he died and then it went up to the...
Number one.
And it was huge in the UK as well, actually.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, he... pretty amazing, like all the things that happened after he died for his music career. It was pretty insane. Yeah. So
he recorded that song in the winter of 67. Of course, in the winter, in that very winter, December 10th, they're flying from Ohio to Madison, Wisconsin for a gig. Plane goes down, and there was actually only one survivor, a gentleman by the name of Ben Colley, who was a part of the band.
Okay.
So he's the only survivor. Like, and he was sleeping on the plane, right? He wakes up like a minute before the crash, takes his seatbelt off.
No.
I don't know why the hell you would do this.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, why would you do that? But, hey, you know, it worked out for him, I guess.
What?
You know?
So he took the seatbelt off. Do you know what he did after that? Like, did he, like...
He didn't know how to swim.
Okay.
So somehow he managed to get out of the plane and get to shore, but since he didn't know how to swim, he couldn't try to save anybody.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
But somehow he managed to get out of there alive.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be the worst feeling, though?
Yeah,
you're going to make it out, but you know all your friends are going to die.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And drowning on top of that.
And drowning.
Or maybe
probably screaming for their lives. Right. Just help me.
Maybe they're already dead, though. I don't know.
You know, you're not... Yeah.
Yeah.
Hard to say, but...
But...
Either way, very traumatic.
Yes.
I think probably something that would change your life forever.
Yeah. Being here in Minnesota and fairly close to Madison, Wisconsin, that's like a, what, three-hour jaunt?
Yeah, it's about three and a half hours from here. Yeah.
I have not visited that site, the crash site, but there is an actual plaque... kind of a memorial, memorial.
Is it near Madison or is it?
It's near Madison.
Near Madison. Yeah. Okay.
Lake Monona.
How's it spelled?
It's Lake Monona.
Monona.
Okay. But it makes me want to say Manamana.
Manamana.
So here's a list of things that have happened to, or well, obviously after his death.
After his death.
1989, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. It's unfortunate that it went this route because. There's a few rock stars, performers that have passed away that are just like, man, so much potential.
You think about like a Janis Joplin or like a Kurt Cobain.
Right, right.
Or like Notorious B.I.G. Mm-hmm. Think of like those people come to mind. Cause Janis Joplin's not our generation, but certainly Kurt Cobain and Biggie are for sure.
I was a big Sublime fan. I think Bradley Noel.
Yeah, Bradley Noel. That's another big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drugs, man. Don't fuck with drugs, man. Like, what the hell?
I am not of that ilk.
Right.
I will not do that.
So you're going to be around for a while. That's good to hear.
I'm hoping so, man. So now I'm going to get all scared to fly on a plane. And I've flown on planes before.
Now, remember, these are like small 12-person planes, you know what I mean?
This is way different.
Right, yeah. Because now, those type of planes now, if the engine goes out, I believe they can glide for a while.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. I mean, I'm not a pilot. I don't know if you knew that. I am not a pilot.
There's more safety measures,
right,
is what you're trying to say, and I would agree with you.
Yes. So here we had the induction to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 89.
I'll stop distracting us.
No,
so
it's
let's go, Otis.
Go Otis. In 93, the post office issued a 29-cent commemorative stamp in his honor, which you remember when stamps were 29 cents?
No. I don't.
No, yeah.
Gas was $1 in 2001.
That was awesome. I remember that.
Yeah, I do too.
94, inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
See, Songwriters. I think I'd almost rather be in that one.
Yeah, not as many people, I'd assume, as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No, I don't think so. I don't know, though. That'd be an interesting thing to fact check.
Yeah. 99, received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award.
See, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's probably the coolest one, actually.
Yeah. Got himself a Grammy.
You got a Lifetime Achievement Award, and you died before you were 30.
Yeah.
That means you were awesome for, like, the 10 years that you were doing it. You were awesome. You were the best.
And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame actually listed 3 of his records, or recordings, rather, not albums. Yeah. Of course, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, Shake, and Try a Little Tenderness. And those are
A Little Tenderness, that's what it is. That's what I was thinking of earlier with tenderness.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
And those were among the list of the 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. So he's got 3 in those top 5, honey. Rolling Stone ranked Redding at number 21 on their list of the 100 greatest artists of all time.
Holy moly.
21.
That means there's 20 better. Holy moly.
Yeah. I'd imagine ICP is probably number 1. And the 8th
Chumbawamba's number 2. Right up there.
Tub thumping. I just remember that song.
Oh, yeah, who doesn't, you know. Just ridiculous.
Redding was also the 8th on their list for the 100 greatest singers of all time.
Now that's interesting. So they rate him 21 for greatest artists,
right?
But 8 for greatest singer.
Right.
I guess there's more. I mean, you know, because you have to consider there's bands,
right,
with a whole group of talented musicians,
right? That could count as a performer,
yeah.
Where the singer is bringing it, carrying.
I wonder who's above him as singers. You got? I mean, you probably like MJ.
Yeah.
Maybe like a Marvin Gaye or an Al Green or a Stevie Wonder. Maybe all three. Well, I'm not, probably not all three of them,
right.
But. Britney Spears. Britney Spears.
ICP again.
ICP singing out the jams, man, going folksy.
So, I just wanted to tell you my personal favorite songs of Otis Redding.
Okay.
Of course, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
That's
like a given. That's like you
that's
like
timeless.
You like House of Pain. You like Jump Around, of course. But you know, you can't go without hearing that song.
Right.
These Arms of Mine, one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah.
I've Been Loving You Too Long. Ooh. But my all-time favorite Otis Redding song.
Yeah.
Do you know this one? I've Got Dreams to Remember.
I do not know that one.
That one is my favorite.
I can hear it right now.
It was in a movie. I don't know. It was in a movie as like a kid. I remember watching a lot. And it's just one of those songs that stuck with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So... I've known it before I even knew it. Yeah.
Okay.
I've Got Dreams to Remember.
It's a good name for a song, by the way.
How about you? Any top faves?
I mean, it's cliche, but Sitting on the Dock of the Bay is probably one of the best songs I've ever heard, period.
That's a bold statement.
I know. It's up there though, man. It's a really, really good song. I actually, the one I mentioned earlier, Respect, is a really good one.
But yeah, it's something I found interesting. If you look back in those days, a lot of artists would not just perform other people's songs, mm-hmm. but they would also re-record them.
Mm.
You know? You don't see much of that these days. I mean, you see cover songs
these days. Yeah, but that's not the same thing.
Yeah, but like, they would almost, it almost seemed like they tried to, I don't know if it was like a competitive thing, or if they were like, that is such a fucking good song, I am going to sing that, and it comes out even better.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, it's interesting, like, the few times I've watched American Idol, mm-hmm. it's interesting to see some of those people, like, try to re-record a song or remake a song.
Right.
And some of them actually, I think, do it, like, a pretty good, you know, pretty darn good job of mm-hmm. it, you know? So it's just so hard to, like, mimic someone like Otis Redding's voice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so hard to, like, try to duplicate something right. like that, so...
If I were to try to re-record someone's song, I would probably try to sound like them.
Yeah.
But you really got
to
take
practice.
It.
You'd have to practice, though, to get the inflection, the intonation, like the pitch.
Yeah. And you really, you got to take
you
it in your own direction.
You can't sound like...
You got to take it in your own direction. It's what you like, got to do.
In your mind, in people's minds, they like, oh, yeah, I can sing like him. No, right. you cannot.
No. Yeah.
So just,
yeah.
no.
Not,
you can't.
Yeah, everyone's a William Hung.
Yeah.
Right? For the most part. Yeah.
Gosh, that guy will make more money than I will ever make in my entire career, probably.
Right. All by just
by sucking.
Yes.
That's the state of affairs.
Right.
We don't got no Otis Reddings hanging around
the
corner.
Don't act like you didn't have a chance to get out there and audition for American
Idol. I certainly had a chance. You will never, ever see me do that.
Hey, man, you could have made $1 million.
It's funny because I've taken voice lessons recently, too, because I am trying to sing a little bit more. But, yeah, you know. You know, maybe I should go on Idol. Just give it a whiz.
Yeah, fuck the lessons, man.
Yeah.
You don't need that shit.
I don't need it. No.
Yeah, I'm taking voice lessons, but from Rob, so yeah. He just said I don't need them.
You going to train me? So dope.
We'll see. We'll talk off air.
You know, okay.
Yeah.
That's business.
Yeah, that's
we gotta
business.
We got to keep it to.
Yeah. We got to talk prices and everything.
We got to do price.
Yeah. Of course, Otis was sampled a lot. In the hip hop genre, most recently, actually, Kanye sampled Otis for a song called Otis.
Yeah, for Otis off of Watch the Throne, I believe.
Now, when I saw that track listing, I was like, the song says it's called Otis, but it actually says featuring Otis Redding.
Yeah,
you know, did you ever notice that?
I do remember because I remember Ali sending me when the single came out, and it said featuring Otis Redding, and I'm like,
how? What?
I'm like, I'm pretty sure Otis Redding been dead for like 40 years.
Right.
So did he just sample his voice or, you know, what was going on there? You know, I don't know. Kanye's crazy, but he's a genius at
yes,
the same time.
Yes, I agree.
You know?
I agree. Yeah. So that's Otis. If you've never heard Otis Redding, you need to listen to Otis Redding.
Yeah. And like, you know, and I will say, like, I'm not a huge Otis Redding expert, but like. He's just iconic. Like, you know, he is... I'm not as hip with music today, so I can't compare him to someone who's present day who's, like, that iconic. Maybe...
Right.
See, I don't want to say, like, one of those pop stars because I don't feel like they're going to have the same impact, but...
You know, on a... this is kind of a different level, but similar. Alicia Keys.
Yeah, okay.
You
maybe
know,
that's a good one. Because I was like going to fall into that trap of saying someone like Justin Bieber, and I'm like, no.
No,
Stop yourself.
Don't go down that
stop
road.
Stop yourself.
But, you know, actually, I don't know much about Bieber, but I know that actually he has musicianship. He has.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some good songs. I'm not even going to front and act like I've never listened to a Justin Bieber song. You know, I've listened to some of his songs. You know, I listen to a ton of music. So
Does he actually do any instruments on his albums?
That I don't know.
Okay.
I know he raps, like he actually can rap, I guess, you know.
Well, obviously, I just know that he can play drums. So
yeah,
if
he
can
play
drums, you can keep a rhythm and he should be able to rap.
Yeah, because like Mac Miller, he can play a bunch of instruments. I do know that. Like he did a lot of, he does drums and he played like guitar on his album and stuff like that. But I don't
know
about Justin Bieber. But yeah, like Alicia Keys playing the piano and just, whew.
She's like my guilty, because I don't get into pop music, you know.
Yeah.
But she is like my, I wouldn't even call her a guilty pleasure because it's pop music, but it is fucking good music. You know what I mean? It is good, just lyrics and, I mean, it's a lot of love songs and that's sappy shit, but for some reason, and that might be why I love Otis Redding.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that's like what that's what's missing from a lot of music.
Right.
And passion. Underground artists, too. They're afraid to put that out there.
Right.
You know what I mean? They think that people are going to view them as corny or cheesy right. or fake or, mm-hmm. you know, and we need more of that. You right. know, like, I think people do that, but I think people just don't find it to be genuine for whatever reason. Or maybe they feel like, well, your problems really aren't significant mm-hmm. enough. But I'm saying is, like, there's universal themes in right. music.
It has to be relatable.
You know? That yeah. Like, almost everyone can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, of course people are going to be cynical when, like, a white kid from the burbs talks about gangster stuff. You right. know? Of course people are going to be cynical about that. But that's why there's just so many different avenues for music. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you can talk about everything. And everyone shares emotions. Everyone shares thoughts about, like, life and death.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And people, like, want to act like that doesn't exist, but everyone thinks it, you know? Right. It's human nature. So it's like, I think that's what more people need to tap into. And everyone goes through relationships and,
right.
you know, love and heartbreak and
the emotions of life.
And the emotions of life. And, yeah. and just, people just need to tap into more of that, you know? And I right. think that would serve them better. A lot better.
Yeah. Right. I hear you.
Yeah. Sorry, that's my rant. Okay,
that's
I'm
cool.
done now.
That was a good rant.
I'm done now.
Yeah. I'm going to call you Ranty Savage.
Rant?
Ooh, yeah.
Breaking snap into a Slim Jim.
Snap into a rant.
Snap into a rant.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of snapping into shit.
Yeah.
Ooh, we're going to break for a Pearson Salt and Nut Roll.
Oh.
Real deal.
Oh, you actually have. Oh, my gosh. You are too kind, man.
Do you like Pearson Salt and Nut Rolls?
I don't even know when's the last. I've had them.
Yeah.
It's been years, yeah. man.
Well, that changes tonight.
This is so nice of you.
That's, oh. You don't get an unofficial sponsor by just saying you're unofficially sponsored. You have to actually, you sell it, man. Sell it.
Dude, are we about to enjoy a salted nut roll?
Do you have peanut allergies?
I do not.
Then dig in, kids.
Dig in, kids. Thank you.
Mm.
Thank you, Otis Redding. Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Oh, thank you. And that's the name. Oh.
Bing.
Double, double.
Now is the part of the podcast while you enjoy your nut roll.
Hmm, and I am.
That I tell a story that isn't true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet.
While you eat. When I was a kid, my dad grew up with Mr. Pearson, the owner of Pearson's nut roll fame. And was actually, he was one of their first employees.
Hmm.
So he actually started cracking peanuts on the peanut cracking line. The assembly line, worked his way up to salting the nuts, then up to mixing the nougat line. Nougat, there's that word again. Then finally nice. To packaging the nut rolls, right? So my whole life, my dad would come home from his job, and he'd always bring a nut roll home for me and my brother to share. And after one day, after like 15 years, comes home, all his like stuff from work, he got fired. And turns out he was stealing those nut rolls.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of nut rolls.
What?
Yeah. But that's not true. It'd be a lot cooler if it was, but that's just not.
Your dad just thieving.
After 15 years, they wow. fired his ass.
Oh, my God.
God. Bob, get the fuck out. And my dad's name really is Bob. Thank you, Bob. What's up, Bob?
Thank you for
if my dad had the internet, I would buy him thankyoubob.com.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah. So let's get into this interview here. Anna Lyrical, Background Noise Crew, Common Labor.
Yeah.
So you're originally from Kansas?
I was born in Kansas City, Kansas. There is a Kansas City, Kansas. Most people don't know. There's Kansas City, Kansas,
know.
And there's
right
Kansas
across
City, Missouri.
The river, right?
Yes, across
from
the
KC
Kansas
Mall?
River. Yeah, and Missouri is the big city with the metropolis. Kansas City, Kansas is steadily improving, but had always kind of been like the more slum area. I grew up, I was born like next to silo stacks and stuff, you know, so.
Slum beautiful?
Slum beautiful.
What brought you here?
My dad had actually grown up here. He had been raised in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center area. And he, you know, he had always, and we always vacationed here every year, every summer, our family went on vacation up here and, we just really loved it. And, And, you know, my parents just, I don't know, they just wanted to move. They wanted to change the scenery from Kansas at the time, and they just moved up. So we moved to one of the most northern points in all of the United States. We moved to International Falls, Minnesota, right on the border of Canada.
Beautiful, though.
Very beautiful place. And you think it's cold right now here? International Falls right now? It's like negative 50, so forget whatever you're saying. Don't even think it's cold.
Sorry for eating a nut roll while I'm talking.
Oh, it's fine. You know,
that's why I got a spit screen here. It's caked with nut roll.
Cake for nuts. Oh, man. Too many jokes.
Salted nut roll caked with nuts.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Kansas City, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
So did you go over to Kansas City, Missouri a lot?
Yeah, I mean, because my aunt lived over there. So, yeah, we were there a lot, you know.
Were you a Royals fan?
A little bit.
Bo Jackson?
Bo Jackson was crazy. Yeah. I mean, Bo Jackson was huge. I mean, that was definitely in my childhood.
Bo knows.
And Bo knows. And they recently did the 30 for 30 film about you. It was called You Don't Know Bo.
Okay.
And it was all about Bo Jackson and him being a two-sport athlete, so it was pretty interesting.
So are you a Twins fan or a Royals fan?
I'm both, but I'm like a Twins fan first. You know, like I've kind of become Minnesotan. Like I kind of I relate to both, but I'm more identify as a Minnesota kid because my formative, important, quote-unquote, years were up here.
Right.
So,
when did you move to the cities down here?
So I lived in International Falls for a couple of years, lived in Woodbury in junior high, and then...
Straight out of Woodbury.
Back when Woodbury was, like, still a growing town. I mean, it's always growing, but this was, like, back when it was, like, a very new suburb still.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, lived here for just a little while. My sister hated school out here, so she was in high school at the time, and she had met some people who went to Creighton, which is inner city... Christian private school where Joe Maurer went, Creighton Durham Hall.
Yes.
So she went there, I was supposed to go there, never took the entrance exam, and my mom was like, we don't want to pay for you to go to private school too, so you're going to go to public school, Colin, which ended up being just a huge blessing, actually. So I went to Central, right off of Lexington 94, right there, that big, huge, gray, ugly building. Yeah, that's where I went to high school. The football field surrounded by barbed wires.
The beauty is what's within, not from the outside.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I loved going to high school there, and it was an eye-opening experience for me. You know, I had never been around a lot of minorities, and I was basically the minority at that school. So it was like, it was a great thing. I mean, it really opened my eyes and to lots of culture and lots of different music and lots of different people. And it was, I mean, I'm so thankful that I went there. You know, it really... influenced my life, I think, in a very positive way.
That's good.
So, nice. Yes.
So at what point did Background Noise Crew obviously came a long time after this, but at what point did you take an interest in rap and anything of that nature, music in general?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm definitely a homer when it comes to this stuff. You know, I definitely... was influenced by the local scene here, you know. But I went to Central around the time that High Respects was at Central, which is the live hip hop band. Yep. If you're familiar, you know.
I got a funny story to tell you about High Respects.
Oh, really? Okay. So yeah, like so we had a place in Central called the Black Box, which is like in the basement of the high school.
Okay.
And High Respects used to play there all the time. Like literally, like I remember like going to one of the shows, and they would have them like on Friday nights, and like Felix, the lead rapper of High Respects, he would work at like Kowalski's or something. He'd come right from work. He'd like have his apron still on. He'd just take it off and just start. And back then, like Felix rapped really fast. I remember that. And like just watching them and like they were doing the hip hop and band thing. And at the time, I was really into like alternative music. And seeing like a band with hip hop was like really, I just thought it was really cool.
Yes.
I was like, man, these kids are like just a little bit older than me and they're like, killing it, you know what I mean? And back then they also had like a whole horn section. They had like a dude playing
trumpet.
Yeah, trumpet. They had a dude playing
saxophone?
No, French horn.
French horn. Right.
And there was a sax guy, Martin Devaney, I believe, at one time was playing saxophone in High Respects as well. Martin Devaney now actually helps co-runs and owns Eclipse Records.
Oh, okay.
On downtown St. Paul.
Right.
And they used to play at Eclipse Records when it was on Grand Avenue.
Okay.
Yeah. So I remember, like all the high school kids would go to the Black Box and watch them play, and all the, and then all the high school kids would go to Eclipse Records and watch them play. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy, man. It was a ton of fun though.
Nice.
Like, and it was really, it was just really inspiring. It was just really, the energy was so good. For those shows. So like them, and then I remember I worked at so they were like the first group I ever like knew about, in the, like before Atmosphere and anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I worked at Grandview Theater on Grand and Fairview, the famous one. It's only got two theaters. I don't know if you're familiar with that theater at
all.
No. It's old school theater, man. It's dope though. Like it's got like the brass like stair, you know, brass, what's that? What's the word I'm looking for?
Rail.
Yeah, the brass rails, right. Like with this and the, and
is
just
it still
all
open?
The, all, what?
Still open?
Oh yeah, it's okay. Open, man. You can go see a movie there, absolutely. I worked there, and the cool thing about working there was I work with kids from other high schools, like from Highland Park, and from like Creighton.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I worked with a kid named Ben, and you know, Ben would always tell me, he would tell me these stories about like this kid that we went to high school with named Mike. And he was like, oh, yeah, Mike, this dude, he raps. He's so good. Obviously, you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Idea.
Oh, right.
And he would always talk about Mike, you got to see Mike rap. Like, you got to see Mike rap. This kid's amazing. And I'm like, how old is he? He's like, oh, he's only like 16. He's so dope, though. And I didn't know about Rhymesayers, and I didn't know about any of this stuff. And I remember one time, after work one time, I was like, because he would talk about him like every week. Like, every week I would work with Ben. He'd be like, oh, dude, Mike put on the show, he was like freestyling like after school, like, oh my god, it's so crazy. And so I was like, all right, fine.
You know? He only takes so much.
Oh, go see him. Okay, he's great. And I liked rap, but I wasn't like super into it.
Right.
You know, I was just really, like I said, listening to Higher Specs and a couple other things here and there. But so yeah, I remember watching and going Mike and seeing Mike rap at like the Highland Park like recreation center, and it was amazing. Like, it was one of the, it stuck in my mind forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he rapped for like 3 hours, dude, and he killed it.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, this is a little, tiny little white dude just like, you know, you never seen anything like that.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the little that I did know
was
about
before
rap,
Eminem.
You know, like, yeah, it was before Eminem.
So before
like,
anyone saw any
type. Yeah, because this is probably like right before Eminem kind of got going.
Okay.
Like, so this was like 98-ish.
Right.
I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was just like, wow, that kid, and like he was smart, and he was like saying cool things, and he was saying things that like I could relate to, but I feel like once again everyone could relate to, and it was wild, man.
Right,
it was
I couldn't
wild.
Imagine that. I mean, that raw,
yeah,
idea, you know. And if side note, if listeners have never heard Idea or Mike Larson, look on YouTube, look up Scribble Jam.
Yeah.
Like 1, 2, and 3, I think, mm-hmm. Were around his, maybe, I don't remember exactly which ones, but just look them up. Some of his freestyle battles were just crazy. Just crazy.
Yeah. So,
and,
yeah,
and that would probably kind of go on par with what you saw firsthand.
Yeah, dude.
You know
it was.
Mean? That's cool.
It was crazy good. It was awesome, you know? And.
So you drew some inspiration from that?
I drew some inspiration from that, and then that's when I kind of started actually like listening to hip hop.
Right.
You know, like I knew about Higher Specs. I had their like one little like live recording record, which was cool. And then that's when I started listening to like, you know, like Rhymesayers stuff, and that's when I kind of started listening to like I remember I listened to like Blueprint's label Weightless Records, from Ohio. I started listening to that a lot. And yeah, it was like senior year. That's when I kind of started listening to all of that stuff. And then like the thing was, is like, I was only 17, so I couldn't go to like any of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like they used to play like at Entry like all the time, you know, like, or like Musab would play, or like Abstract Pack would play, or, you know, stuff like that. And, I even remember Cancer being on one bill, and I was like, oh, well, that's an interesting name. And, you know, and I remember a couple of times, like I actually worked at Kowalski's on Grand. I worked with a guy named John, and John was a really oddball, but he definitely got me into like more of the. He told me about some of the other local groups around, and me and him would like sneak into shows at First Ave. I remember we saw like, it's just so crazy because now Atmosphere puts out one little blip on Facebook and their show is sold out in like
right.
a day.
Yeah.
I go, you know, when I'm 17, I sneak into the show, pay $5 at the door, no line, you know, like, right. and the venue is not even like a quarter full, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just like, just, it's so crazy to see how huge they've become. Which is, I mean, it's just cool. You know, I'm happy for them, proud of them for sure.
You were on the forefront, man.
Yeah, I was there a lot of. I could have been there for even more stuff if I had been a little bit older. But you know, I tried to get around as much as I could, and I rode the bus like everywhere around the city a lot. And then when I had a car, you know, I tried to get around as much as I could. Saw a lot of shows though, man.
Yeah. So at what point did you actually record something?
I waited, man, and I don't mean to toot my own horn, but like.
You're the shit.
No, absolutely not. No, but
just kidding.
I think that's one big, huge problem with the digital age is quality control. Anyone can just grab a laptop and a computer and a mic and make a song and put it. And like, that's why MySpace died, in my opinion. One of the reasons, at least. I mean, it might have died anyway.
MySpace is back. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so huge. But like, I just remember going to all these whack MySpaces and listening to all these whack songs. And I was like, I can't do this yet. Like, I need to like get some input. I'm so glad I did that. Like, I got some input, got honest opinions from people that I trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, if I knew a rapper was around, I'd send them a song. And I'm like, what do you think of this? You know, like, is this okay? Is this cool? You know? And, so yeah, like I started writing songs, you know, like when I was like 16 and then like, honestly, I didn't feel comfortable putting out a record until I was like 21, 22. That's when I was like, thought I was okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, well, I'm decent enough now where maybe I should make a few songs. But I really just wanted to like practice first, man. I wanted to get better because I knew I wasn't that good. But a lot of people don't have that.
Yeah, I
they don't have that filter.
I
around,
wish half the internet
know?
Would have that.
And, you know, seeing a guy like thought Mike do it, you know, that kind of. That will humble you in about 2 seconds. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like seeing
right.
someone that good, mm-hmm. that young, like you're like, okay, if I want to be where he is, I gotta put in the time and I gotta really practice my craft and
right.
make sure I'm decent enough, you know, where mm-hmm. I can put a product out that people will actually like.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't really do it. Yeah. I think I made my first demo when I made Correct Dosage when I was, 20, 21, 22. Yeah. Okay. So I mean, I'm late in the rap game, but whatever, you know.
Right. What happened with that album? Did you actually record it? Do you just burn it CDs or what?
Oh, I just burned that one. Yeah. I went to a studio in St. Paul at the time. I remember it was called Radis. Shout out to those guys. Those are cool dudes. And so I did that and did 7 songs and it was cool and people liked it, you know. And I brought it back to college for my final year of college and had the demos and people were starting to kind of. I was getting a buzz. I went to school in Eau Claire. Started kind of getting a buzz around there. And the messed up thing was, so I went to college in 2001 and I graduated in 06. And during that time frame in like Minnesota hip hop was like things just all blew up. So when I came back, like I always kind of like had a little bit of my finger on the pulse of it, but I really didn't know what all the things that were going on. So when I came back, like everything was different. Like Atmosphere was like getting really big mm-hmm. and like, you know, Idea put out a couple records and, you know, there was a lot of other rappers now, mm-hmm. you know, like tons of them, you know, and I was like, man, okay, I guess I got to step my game up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like there was like 400 more rappers than when I left,
yep.
you know, it was crazy in that 5-year time, just like kind of, and like POS was starting to kind of get going mm-hmm. and, you know, it was.
So
just,
were you going by Analyrical at this time?
Still? Yes. Okay. Yes, I was.
Right.
For a little bit in college, I had some really bad rap names.
Right.
And then I changed to Analyrical my final year when I made my demo.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So at what point, so you come back, what happened from there?
There, you know, I made a mixtape called the Platter Mixtape. You can find that on the BNC Music Bandcamp. Made the mixtape and was doing the solo thing for a while. And me and TQD had thought about maybe starting a group together. That didn't pan out. You know, I joined Background Noise. And then after that, you know, I went on a few tours, like just little mini tours. Started working on First Date, and I made the album First Date. Released that on Background Noise in 2009. And, you know, did a couple of tours with that. And then, you know, in 2010 was kind of a crazy year for me. That's when I got diabetes, and that was kind of a life-changing event. So I didn't do anything music-wise for like 7 months. I couldn't. My doctor was like, no, you got to be healthy first.
Right.
I couldn't play a show, couldn't do anything. So it was really frustrating for me. And at that point, I was like 26, and I'm like, do I want to keep doing music? You know, what's going on? And then, so that happened, and then, you know, my relationship at the time ended in that same period of time. And then Mike died like a month or two after that, after my relationship ended. So a lot of crazy things kind of happened.
Who are you, Brother Ali?
Yeah. A lot of things happened in 2010.
That's cool, though. I mean, it's not cool.
No,
but,
it's not cool.
You know, obviously, if you're not alive, you can't rap.
Right.
So I'm glad that you realized that.
Yeah, I'm lucky to be alive, though. I could have died. I mean, it's nuts.
I did not know that.
No, yeah, a lot of people don't know that. It's not something I talk about a lot, but, you know, I do think it's relevant to this interview.
Right.
What's going on right now. You know, and so, like, after Mike died, Jason and I got together 2 weeks after Mike died, so, like, on Halloween. You know, at first, we didn't have any plans of making any songs. We were just going to, like, hang out, listen to music, talk about Mike a little bit, just kind of, because we were both pretty close with him, and
who is this now?
Fingers, Jason. Okay. From Background Noise, the producer of Common Labor.
First name.
Yeah, Fingers.
I only know his last name, Fingers.
Oh, Brown?
No, Fingers.
Oh, Fingers, yeah. No, Fingers and I got together, and, you know, at first we were just talking, and then one thing led to another, and we went on just a marathon recording thing, and we kind of like, you know, to honor Mike, we just decided to like, I just decided make up the songs on the spot. So he would like start making a beat. I would just start writing and then we record it all at once. And we did that for about 22 straight hours. I remember we left for an hour to go to Easton's house for a Halloween party. Then we came back, drank more coffee, stayed up till about 5 a.m. and we had 4 songs made.
Nice.
And it was just crazy. And we were like, what just happened? You know? And that was the first, that was the start of Common Labor. And then what we would do is we would get together like once a month because our schedules were both kind of hectic. And we would get together once a month and we would just have another marathon recording session and we would just build songs from the ground up together. Mm-hmm. Like that's how it's supposed to be, you know?
Right.
Like, when you go into a studio session with real musicians, like that's what they do. Mm-hmm. They jam and they figure out like arrangements and structures and they build those songs like one step at a time. And that's kind of what me and Jason did. We'd go back and forth. And you know, so we made like 20 songs almost and we picked the 10 best ones we liked. And the process took a little while. I mean, he got married, so that took some time off from it.
Right.
But me and he and I both knew that it was pretty special after that first session that we had. And we were like, we got to do this more.
That's cool.
And then we kind of was like, okay, now we're a group. Okay, now we have an album. Okay, now we got to release it. Okay, now we got to do a video. You know,
right.
Like it just all kind of came together like that, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Know? So
burned down the old school. That's the video.
Yeah.
Right. Very well done.
Yeah. Thanks.
Who shot that? Who did that?
A guy named Patrick Monroe. My mother kind of hooked that one up. Thanks, Mom. Yeah. He had studied at the University of Kansas, and my mom worked at the University of Kansas, and. Yeah, he's done a lot of film work and video work, and yeah, he's great. He lives in Kansas City, but he came down, and another friend of my mom's, he is a teacher at the University of Kansas. He kind of helped direct the video. His name is Madison. Great guy. Old dude, old black guy from Harlem, New York, man. So he's like...
Nice.
Man, he's awesome. He's just... Cool as a cucumber, man.
Yeah.
Just super cool. And, like, he just has stories for days. Because he's been in, like, the TV film industry for, like... Or he had been until he became a professor. He had been in it for, like, 20, 30 years. So, working in New York. So, I mean, he had tons of stories. And just such a smart and, I don't know, good dude.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was fun.
So, in the video, there's a red chair.
Yeah.
Is there some sort of personal vendetta against this chair? You got to burn it? You got to burn it? What's up?
There's actually 2 chairs, but the way... Oh, see, now I'm giving away all the secrets. no, it was just it's just symbolic of the theme of the song, which is kind of people's ability to always just be, especially in the technology age, like, you know, we always take things for granted and we're always just interested in the next best thing. You know, so that was just kind of like our symbolism is we had to call in chief of fire marshal, fire marshal of the city of Lawrence. We shut the video down in Kansas. My parents live there still, so or moved back there and live there now. So we got the city fire marshal, and they came with a fire truck, and they had firemen, and so like they supervised. Because you can't
the
just like
of the chair.
You can't just burn stuff on public property. Right. I guess that's against the law. Okay. So you have to get a permit and an ordinance to do right. that, which we did.
Nice.
And but yeah, they were there.
Got
and,
to follow protocol.
And so what we did was, you know, we had one shot at it. So we, you know, kind of took some lighter fluid to the bottom of the chair and we burned it and filmed it in slow motion and in HD. So got some really good shots. And obviously, you see at the end of the video, you know, it burning and stuff like right. that. So it's cool.
I understand the message behind the song, but you completely took any concern for carcinogens and just polluting the air out the window. It's just like, fuck that.
Yep. No regard.
You want an iPhone 6? Who gives a shit? You know?
You know, we asked the fire guy about that. We're like, oh, is burning this going to be like really harmful for the atmosphere? And he's like, well, nothing's really good, like burning.
Cars like, aren't good yeah, for the
he's
atmosphere.
Like, nothing's really good. Yeah. He's like, just... He's like, this is not anything, though. He's like, don't, it's fine.
Right.
You know? So he kind of cleared us of any bad guilt we might have right. in our head for carcinogens.
That's good. So, no, and no one got hurt.
No one got hurt. No, it was okay, completely
good,
fine.
Good. Except for the chair.
The chair, got it, man.
Yeah. So background noise crew, Fingers, yourself, Common Labor, you got TQD,
mm-hmm.
Tone Crusher Smith.
Yeah, he's, I think I can say this. This might be the first time it's said anywhere. Tone Crusher is officially retired.
Really?
Yes, he is no longer, I hope Ali doesn't kick my butt, but it's been announced within the crew, so I feel confident. And if Ali has issue with it, then I guess we'll just talk later. But yeah, he's retired from making like songs and new music.
Mm-hmm.
He will still join us on select background noise crew shows. Okay. You know, but he's got the two kids now, and he's got the teaching job, and he's and you know, we you know obviously would love for him to do more songs, but you know he kind of has to take care of the family stuff and right. the stuff at home. Right. So you know, we wish him the best, and he's always a part of the crew, like no matter what. Mm-hmm. So you know, no love lost, and definitely like it was his decision. Like we didn't you know. Say you need to quit or you need to do this or that. He was right. just like, eh,
personal decision.
I got other stuff going on. Sorry, right. guys, you know. And we're like, hey, man, it's all good. So do your thing.
Who else am I missing here? Status Rain.
JL McGee.
How could I miss another McGee?
We added a couple new members, so that might be why.
Okay.
We added JL.
He's newer, right?
JL McGee, and we added Legend Has It, or
Legend
Dave.
Legend Has It, okay.
So they're Zombie. That's them two together.
Zombie.
JL and Legend Has It is Zombie, so...
It's not zombie time zombie X zombie.
It's just zombie.
Zombie. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So BNC, how do you feel about like the local state of How do you feel about the state of the local scene currently?
Local scene.
Because you've been in it, then you've been
I've
in
been
it for.
Been in it for a long time, yeah. and you know certainly there's. Pitfalls, and you know, I could complain about this or complain about that, but I think the scene is at a very good place. I think it's very competitive. I think there's also a lot of love. I think a lot of the time that gets overshadowed by people feeling that they should have more success, so they compare themselves to other people. But mm-hmm. really, it's up to you, you know. And I'm not going to complain about it. I already did that years ago, and it didn't get me anywhere. So, I think the scene is cool, man, and there's a lot of rappers I like and respect around here. You know, our friend Mally, who's hosting the show, I love him. Known that dude forever. Dude kills it. You know, we've got a lot of different vibes. You know, like Meta is coming out. He's kicking some butt right now. We got a crazy dude like Prof. He kicks butt, and I don't know. I think our scene is good. I think people need to maybe focus on what they're doing a little more instead of finding scapegoats. You know,
right.
I guess I'm just older. I'm just kind of over all that, you know, like I'm just focused on making great music, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hopefully the scene embraces it, you know, maybe they will, maybe they won't. Time will tell.
Right.
But, you know, I guess, you know, maybe getting older, maybe getting wiser. I just realize there's certain things I can control and certain things that I cannot control. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now my focus is just making Common Labor as great as possible. And I think there's, it's definitely a unique sound. It's a new sound for our music scene, and mm-hmm. I think it's needed, and I think that people are really going to like it, you know? So
where does the title Tale of the Troubadours come from?
Initially we were called the Troubadours, but then we found out a UK pop outfit had that name already, and they were already kind of big, so we decided, we're not going to fight that. We're just going to find a new name.
You know what? Just Americans draw a lot of inspiration from British, like The Office, for instance. The Office, UK. You know, Americans were like, let's take our own little take on that and make The Office, you know? That could have been the Troubadours, man.
You're right. Rob, you're right.
Yeah.
When you're right. And you're
Common
right.
Labor is a good name. I like it.
Yeah.
So how did that name come about then?
So I'm glad you asked. It's not too cool of a story, but I guess you kind of had one of those you kind of had to be there moments. Basically, once we realized we weren't the Troubadours, we didn't have a name for like a couple of weeks, and we like had a show coming up, and we're like, okay, what are we doing, you know? So one day it was just like, I texted Fingers, and I was like, okay, we're figuring out a name today. So we just started texting each other back and forth every name we could possibly think of. Some of them were really bad, obviously, because it's all in the moment, you know?
Right.
And then he just goes, Common Labor. And I'm like, yeah, that's actually, yes, that's actually very good. Right. I don't know where he came up with it from.
Yeah.
To this day, I still don't know how he thought of it, but... you know,
I'm going to have him on the show, just so you know.
Oh, nice. I'll get that story. Elaborate more then on that.
Right.
Probably nothing more than, it just sounded cool.
There was some good build up to it. Right. It was more than that. Absolutely. Give yourself some credit.
No, so he texted me that, and I was like, that sounds great, you know? And because I think, you know, we, not that we didn't care about a name, but we were just like, we're so into the music. We were just like, I hate trying to name. You know, I hate trying to, because we thought the troubadour was so good, because troubadour means like a traveling songsman. It refers to like medieval times when dudes would go from town to town, like, and they would like spread the news by telling stories in song form. Like,
right.
That's how you would get news, is from some of these like traveling songsmen.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go from town to town and do that. And we just thought that was really cool, mm-hmm. you know, idea, like to go from town to town to be these people that deliver the news and deliver the message with music. We liked the whole concept of that, but yeah, unfortunately, someone already had that name. But then we were like, well, we still like the Troubadours idea. We're Common Labor, so we're going to name it Tales of the Troubadours, you know?
Okay.
Like,
there you go. Got to plug that name
still
in there.
Still got to plug that name a little bit, so.
Yeah. That's cool. But let's wrap this up here. Where can one check out your music if one wanted to learn about
Man,
you?
A lot of places, but the main ones I will tell you about, Common Labor, that's one word, .bandcamp.com.
Boom.
That's where you're going to find. You can stream the whole album right now, actually.
Really?
You can download it, too. I mean, it's going to cost you $1 a song, but or you can buy the whole album, pre-order it, please, for like $7. So save yourself a couple
support.
Dollars.
Support.
Or you can go to bncmusic.bandcamp.com, and that's where you can find all of the stuff from Background Noise Crew. Most of it's free. Almost all of it's free. I think it's stuff for like our album and maybe like Status's album.
I like free.
Yeah. It's a good price.
Yeah.
It's well within most people's ranges.
Or it looks like...
Assuming they can afford the internet, then they can...
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. But
so nothing's ever free.
Some people
free.
Are chintzy. It looks like backgroundnoisecrew.com. Is that...
Absolutely. You can head there. I think we're going to be revamping the site here sometime in the next couple of months. But as of right now, check that out. There's always something usually new up on our news feed, on our page. And you can check out bios about everyone and, you know, see shows that we're doing and all that good information.
Do you know if, I know there were some nude pics that leaked online about you, or did you get that taken care of, or are they still out there?
Nude pics?
Nude. They're out there, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I haven't seen those yet.
Neither have I, but I just made it up, but are they still out there? Lawyers are
I
on
don't
it.
Know.
Your lawyers are on it.
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, it's maybe it's one of those things that's
the
a
only way to find
it's
out.
It's leaked through the cracks. No pun there.
All right, man. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Also, let me just quick plug. If you like to do the Twitter or the Facebook thing, you can find me. You know, facebook.com/analyrical, facebook.com/commonlabormusic, or you can go on Twitter @analyrical. BNC, that's all one word, and or @commonlabor, you can find me at those places too if you'd like to chat or retweet or talk your BS and tell me I'm an
so
idiot.
So many avenues. Yeah. So many avenues.
So many ways you can go with all of it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, man. That was a lot. That was, I feel like we talked about so much, but yet like nothing at all at the same time.
Hey, a lot of information is better than no information.
That's true.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, my ADHD makes us just segue off
into
Neverlands.
They're branches in a tree that's growing up. You know, it's growing in the right direction.
It's like your podcast is a tree.
Yeah.
It's slowly growing.
Think about it.
I feel good about it. Right. I feel very good.
You've helped build a branch.
I'm glad, man. Episode 70, Al Green, I'm going to...
You got plenty of time.
I'm tearing
man.
The house down with that one.
That is, what, 67 away. Weeks away? Or 66, actually.
So that's like a year and like 3 months from now.
You know, I would hope that you would be squeezed in between, like, let's see, Jay-Z and Beyonce. You know, like, week 69 and week 71. And hopefully not, like, Jay-Z's older brother's cousin.
You might not even get a chance with me, Rob. I might be on tour.
There, yeah, right.
I might be on tour with Jay-Z.
Right, right.
After his week 69.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm already...
But you're already... Well, you know, hey, come on. You're locked
I'm
in.
I'm already at
you're
Madison Square in. Garden playing a benefit show or something.
For Jay-Z's older brother's cousin.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, thanks again for doing the show.
No problem, man. Pleasure is all mine.
Thank you, Rob.com.
Yeah.
Go
thank
there.
You, Rob.
Go there. Link to any of my other sites. I do graphic design work.
Yeah, you do.
I do another podcast with a buddy of mine. It's called Some People's Kids Podcast.
Nice.
And we talk about other entertaining stuff, movies, TV shows.
See, I can mess with that too. Yeah. Anytime you want me to
we haven't had guests yet, but I'm not saying we couldn't.
I'll come through. You just Facebook message so me like you did the other day, and I will respond.
All right. Thank you, Rob.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Peace out, y'all.